This is Radio Influence.
Got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he scores the count.
Wow.
And here comes a mention. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
The UFC and Bellator will both be holding fight cards this weekend, and both events will be headlined by heavyweight bouts, as the Bellator card on Saturday night will be headlined by Fedor Emelianenko making his Bellator debut against Matt Mitrione, and the UFC card will be headlined by the unofficial social media king of the UFC, Derek Lewis, as he meets one of the most hated fighters in the UFC, Travis Brown. Daniel Galvan and I are going to preview both fight cards on this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast. We will give our predictions for the fights taking place this weekend, what is the best fights of the weekend, and we'll tell you what fights are going under the radar at UFC Fight Night 105 and Bellator 172. Now, before we get into these fight cards, we'll let you know about our sponsor, Fight TV. Fight is your number one source for MMA, boxing, and pro wrestling video. Enjoy live wrestling, MMA, and boxing on the screen of your choice with just the Fight app. Download the Fight app today by going to fite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that's fite.tv/radioinfluence/. And that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It's going good, Jason. I'm looking forward to finally figuring out whether or not Fedor is back. And despite the fact that we received that answer the last time he fought, I feel like every single time he does fight, I'm just going to lie to myself and pretend like it's a new guy. I can't wait. But otherwise, other than mixed martial arts on Saturday and then on Sunday, I don't have a whole lot going on. What do you got going on this weekend?
You know, you got the NBA All-Star Game. As an Orlando Magic fan, we don't have much to cheer about, but we can cheer for Aaron Gordon in the slam dunk contest on Saturday night.
Yeah, you can also cheer for Serge. He's not a Magic.
No, he's not a Magic player anymore. No, so, we're. We continue the rebuilding phase. We're pretty used to that as Magic fans. The rebuilding is pretty much, we might as well just call ourselves the Orlando Rebuilding Magic.
That would be, saying you guys are rebuilding is probably too big of a compliment, because rebuilding means you understand what you're doing, and I don't think that's the case. I feel like you are using sand instead of bricks to build your house, and that's what happens. Now you have Terrence Ross and a first-round pick from the Raptors instead of Victor Oladipo and all those things you guys gave the Thunder.
Yeah, for that first round pick, that'll probably be like in the 20s.
Yeah.
And God knows the Magic will probably draft another European player, because we have so much success in drafting European players.
Or you could draft Ollie Thompson.
Yes, Ollie Thompson, of course, taking on Chet Congo on Saturday night, Bellator 172. In terms of these two main event matchups, and I go, in terms of, first off, between the two events, and I've had a couple people ask me, they said, if you had to only pick one event, which event are you watching? And I go back and forth, and I think about this as, you know, obviously there is something about the mystique of Fedor and why you want to tune in. And, you know, let's be honest about it. You're tuning in on Saturday night to watch the Bellator event. It's for the main event and co-main event. You know, besides that, I mean, maybe you're interested in how Josh Koscheck looks. You know, can he snap this losing streak making his Bellator debut? Chet Congo hasn't exactly put together an entertaining fight in a while. And then you've got a women's matchup on that card with one fighter making her pro debut. But then you look at that UFC card, and you can go down the line of different fights that interest you. And I guess I kind of say, if I had to watch one, I'd probably still say the UFC, because I think there's more depth to that card than there is for the Bellator event.
Well, I think the two fights atop of the Fox Sports 1 prelims is what is the big differentiator. I think the UFC card has the better main event, largely due to Derek Lewis being involved in it. Although Travis Brown, despite having quite a few losses in a row, those losses are to highly skilled heavyweights. And But again, when you talk about that depth, I really love like the Nordin Taleb Santiago Ponzinibbio fight. I think that could be a fight of the night contender. Santiago has looked good recently, and Carlos Esparza Randa Marcos is a fight where you have two real skilled strawweight fighters. But if you're looking at this from Randa Marcos's perspective, a loss would be devastating. I think where the UFC card maybe loses some of its luster, Jason, is in the beginning portion of the main card. It seems like you got some clear favorites there in your Sarah McMahons, etc. Maybe you have some surprising debut fighters, but I think largely, Jason, both these cards would be much better if you just picked and choose the best fights on both and just combined them a la carte. I think that would be the beneficial, the best way to view this weekend of fights. Just watch it on Monday.
Yeah, no question. In terms of the two main event fights, I guess is it a 1A, 1B situation? I mean, Lewis and Brown in terms of rankings means, I think, much more than Fedor versus Matt Mitrione, because I'm the first one that says the Fedor of 2006 ain't walking through the door, folks. It's the Fedor of 2017.
Yeah, no, I don't think this is 1A, 1B, Jason. I think this is 1 being the UFC fight, 2 being the Bellator fight. And it is entirely dependent on the fact that I believe we'll be watching Derek Lewis and Travis Brown fight 2 years from now. I'm not particularly sure that we'll be watching Matt Mitrione and Fedor Emelianenko fight 2 years from now. Like this morning, I woke up, drank some coffee, and to put on the Fabio Maldonado Fedor Emelianenko fight to get hyped, and that did not accomplish that purpose. I mean, Fedor, what looked good was the cardio and the conditioning, but again, what excites me about this Bellator fight is simply the idea of watching Fedor fight one more time. Whereas what puts the UFC over the top, in my opinion, is that this is exciting because the potential for Derek Lewis is quite immense. And then Travis Brown is a fighter whose stock is incredibly low right now, but has displayed the talent level to kind of get back there. So I just think that fight means a lot more long term. That's why I would put it clearly above the Bellator main event.
You know, it's crazy about the Fedor-Mitrione fight. You realize Fedor's only 2 years older than Matt Mitrione?
Yeah, I was really thinking that. It does seem like a lot of the focus in that Spain event, Jason, is so much about how poorly Fedor has looked or how old he is. And we've completely ignored the deficiencies Matt Mitrione has displayed. I mean, when you go back, and I know he got a late start. He's 38 now. But his initial fight in Bellator against Carl Soumanutafa, it did not start off great for Mitrione, right? He got rocked early in that one.
No, he did. I mean, I've said it multiple times. I think that Matt Mitrione's going to starch Fedor Emelianenko here, but would it surprise me if Fedor wins? Not in the least. And the reason I think you go back to that is what happened in Matt's Bellator debut, where I mean, it looked for a moment there that he was going to get upset. I mean, and I think that, you know, naturally as reporters, podcast hosts, and sports fans, we always remember the last thing we saw out of an athlete. And, you know, the last time we saw Matt Mitrione, we saw him put on a solid performance against Ole Thompson. Ole, you know, had some moments in that fight, but Matt, you know, did very, you know, ended up getting the victory there, looked very good, looked very crisp, much better than his Bellator debut. But then we remember Fedor, and I know there's going to be a lot of people that are going to listen to this podcast that love Fedor or whatnot. But if that fight against Fabio Maldonado was anywhere in the world besides Russia, not only does he lose, that fight is called in the first round.
Yeah. I mean, we have seen some referees in America that have been pretty awful in terms of stop. But yeah, for the most part, that one's over. I mean, he was out. Clearly, like you look at his eyes and he was not particularly focused on Fabio Maldonado. Again, what I would say is what you saw in that fight was there was certainly a lot of offense out of Fedor. In terms of like the late third round, he was still going with the wild strikes. And the thing with Matt Mitrione is like defensively, he is not, you know, Remy Bojanski. He does not have phenomenal striking defense. So really to me, when I look at this Fedor Matt Mitrione fight, it's just a matter of who gets caught first. And you know, I think more times than not, Matt Mitrione will be the one to rock Fedor and get the early finish here. But But a significant amount of those times, I also think Fedor would be able to catch him. I mean, there's a reason why, outside of the women's flyweight bout, that this main event has the closest odds on the Bellator card. I mean, Fedor, according to bestfightodds.com, is like plus 110 here. And the reason being is that when you have two incredibly old heavyweights with issues defensively, for Matt Mitrione, it's getting hit. For Fedor, it's when he gets hit, he gets rocked. It really is a crapshoot, Jason. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah, you know, and you look at underdogs who might win this weekend. I mean, just because of the way things go in Bellator, you can't help but think that maybe Brooke Mayo, who's making her pro debut against Vida Ortega, Vida 2-1 in her career. Brooke went 8-2 on the amateur scene there in California. Maybe you go there. But, you know, I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be watching on Saturday night, and obviously a lot of it has to do, you know, with Fedor Emelianenko. And we got this question from at Chris Conti 27. He goes, what would you consider a rating success for Fedor versus Mitrione? Seems like Bellator targeting 2 million peak, maybe 1.3 million average. I think in terms of probably the target range, I think you would kind of be looking at exactly what Tito and Shel Sonnen got. I think it'll be interesting because, you know, last year kind of, I think the NBA slam dunk contest got its luster back. I think for some time there weren't as many people that were kind of, you know, all in on the slam dunk contest. So I think that definitely is going to hurt them, you know, and that does cap off NBA Saturday night. So I think that's going to potentially hurt them a little bit. I think 2 million a peak for Fedor Mitrione is probably right where it's going to be.
Yeah, I think you are looking at that straight up comparison to Chael Tito. I mean, this is a Bellator event that has a lot of buzz, and it's the type of Bellator fight card where this is the one they need to be successful, Jason. I mean, these type of events, these quote unquote like marquee events, need to prove Bellator that they can draw ratings when they really focus their resources, because a lot of the times when we are previewing these Bellator cards and we're talking about really weak main events, I mean, when we're talking about your Chidi Anjuokwani, Melvin Gillard type main events and stuff like that, usually it's like, well, this is in the wake of a much larger Bellator event. Well, this is the much larger Bellator event, so this has to be one of the top rated Bellators, and if you do see something significant here, I think you're going to see a little narrative here where Bellator is like, we got our groove in 2017 when you pair the Tito fight with the Fedor Mitrione fight. So the competition isn't steep. I mean, it's largely going to come down to the type of like social media traction you get out of that All-Star Saturday night. But I would anticipate you get some viewership, because it does feel like there is a bit of buzz to this card. There is a bit of a mystique to watching Fedor fight. And maybe those that tune in early will be like, oh, Josh Koscheck, I remember that name. I will watch this fight.
You remember the last time Josh Koscheck won a fight?
Yeah, I was 7 years old.
Yeah, and that was all the way back in 2012. That was a split decision win over Mike Pierce. Since that fight, split decision loss to Johnny Hendricks, TKO loss to Robbie Lawler, knockout loss to Tyron Woodley, submission loss to Jake Ellenberger, and a submission loss to Eric Silva. And of course, the last time we saw Josh was against Eric Silva. That was nearly 2 years ago.
Let me explain to you the thought process of every person previewing this Bellator card. They're like, oh, Josh Koscheck is fighting. Oh, he hasn't won in a while. You know what? I'm going to say he loses here. Let me just inspect his opponent. And then they inspect his opponent, Mauricio Alonso, and they're like, oh, I can't pick this guy to win. I guess I got to revert back and pick Koscheck. I think that is the dance that most people have done here.
Yeah, this seems like the typical showcase-type fight. You know, when Josh's fight against Paul Daly didn't come together last year, you know, he pulled out of that fight, I honestly thought we would never see Josh Koscheck again. And then when Bellator announced this, I was pretty surprised. But then when you see the matchup, you're like, you know what? That's not exactly a surprising matchup here by Bellator. It seems like it's a little bit of a showcase fight. You know, Alonso has won back-to-back fights. Both those have come via decision. But this is a fight that, you know, when you look at him, he's 3-3 with one no contest in his last 7 fights. So this is clearly an opportunity for Josh to go out there and showcase abilities. But I guess ultimately the question I kind of have with Josh Koscheck is, what is the long-term future? I think we have the same question about Josh Thompson. Anyone who listens to his media scrum from earlier this week, you kind of, you know, you walk away with that same type of, you know, thought process of what does the future hold for Josh Thompson when he sits there and says, hey, if this fight wasn't in San Jose, I wouldn't have taken the fight. San Jose is the only place I want to fight. He says, look, I'm not fighting for titles, even though later on in that session with the media, he said, he goes, hey, yeah, I am thinking about the Chandler fight. But basically, I think he's sending the message to Michael Chandler that, hey, you're going to have to come to San Jose to fight me, which, I mean, look, I understand why Josh has that mentality. I get it. I understand it. But, you know, I think, like, with Koscheck and Thompson, there's a lot of unknowns heading into Bellator 172 with them, and kind of what should we expect from them?
Yeah, I think stylistically, you got to feel more confident about Koscheck's ability to win than if he was matched up with a striker and a guy with good defensive wrestling. But there is a lot of old guys on this card, Jason. I mean, Congo, Thompson, Koscheck, Emelianenko, Matt Mitrione. I mean, what if there's like four guys that just retire on this card? I mean, that won't happen, but it could.
I think the question's got to be is if Mitrione defeats Fedor, does Fedor have another fight in Bellator?
Yeah, I think that's the question. But what do you think the answer would be? What's your answer?
I would say no.
Yeah? I would say yes, I think so. I Bellator really hasn't shown – maybe I'm wrong when I'm saying this. Am I wrong in saying that Bellator really hasn't shown an ability to stop itself from promoting name fighters when they lose a lot?
I don't think you're that off base. I mean, I look at the end of it, and Scott Coker, it's one of the things I found kind of interesting about Scott over the past couple weeks is he's really been carrying that narrative of, you know, hey, look, we're in the ratings business. And, you know, look, Fedor can bring a lot of ratings, or we expect he's going to bring a lot of ratings. But I think that I definitely believe there are some of these older fighters that Bellator's definitely trying to get away from.
Yeah, well, you know what? What is concerning, Jason, is Scott Coker. I don't think of him. I don't think of like the type of honesty you get out of a Howard Stern interview. So would Mr. I'll get back to you tomorrow starts telling you about how it's the ratings, it's all about ratings. Like he's being that honest. You know, he's dug deep in the ratings bonanza. You know that you got some questionable.
Well, I think he's being given the information. I'm sure it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's people in the Viacom offices in New York and the Viacom offices in Hollywood that are sitting there and are breaking down those numbers in terms of, you know, who are the draws, you know, whatnot. I talked about my podcast this week in terms of what happened with Bubba Jenkins is, you know, at the end of the day, Bellator and Spike, they break down these television ratings and they know exactly what fighters draw. And, you know, when you have so many fights in Bellator, they know whether you're bringing eyeballs to that television set or not, or whether it's just the normal people who always watch Bellator events. You know, so, I mean, Fedor win and lose, do I think they would still love to do a Fedor fight? Yes. And I think there's potential fights for Fedor that you could do, even after Matt Mitrione. But, you know, the question's got to be, though, if Matt wins this fight, this will be his third fight in Bellator. My understanding is only has a 4-fight deal in Bellator. What do you do if you're Matt Mitrione? Do you fight it out and then say, let's see what the UFC now wants to offer me?
Ah, man, I don't – it seems like Matt Mitrione goes to sleep with Bellator underwear, though. Like, it really seems like he is all in on Bellator.
Because they're paying him a crap ton of money.
I know. And
I mean, God bless him. I mean, when I heard the figure he made for his first fight, I was like, good Lord. God bless Matt Mitrione.
But the thing is, when you look at the type of fighters they're letting go, it would be kind of crazy for the UFC to spend that much money to bring back Grant Mitrione if he wins this fight, and even if he wins his next fight. But maybe it wouldn't be crazy because he would be what? A top level heavyweight if he wins this fight and then wins his next one, and he would know how to talk well, and he would have a name, and this is a division that is always in need of names and stuff. But
man, age goes against him though.
Yeah, you're talking about he would be 40 at that point potentially.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting question, Jason, but I think he ends his television mixed martial arts career in Bellator. I really do.
I do, too. My prediction is Matt Mitrione by second round TKO.
Man, I think this one ends in the first round. I got Matt Mitrione. There's a part of me that wants to pull the trigger on Fedor. If you're a Fedor fan, don't fret. I think he has certainly got a significant chance here, largely due to the fact that we're talking about old heavyweights with great power. But yeah, Matt, first round is my pick. By the way, just quick mention, Jason, I know you're a Bellator hipster. I'm a big fan of the of this fighter on the prelim card that's taking on Francisco France, Anatoly Tokhov, in the middleweight division. I think that's somebody you need to circle and check mark.
I'm surprised that didn't get put on the main card.
I am too.
I get that you're trying to give people a reason to tune into your preliminary card broadcasts, whether it's Bellator.com or the Bellator app. I understand that. But to me, when you're trying to get people more interested in your 185-pound division, I don't understand why you have that fight on the preliminary card, which, let's be honest about it, 90% of that preliminary card is nothing but local ticket sellers. I would have rather seen them put that fight on the main card and have the Ortega-Mayo fight on the preliminary card.
Yeah, because I get it. Maybe you wanted to build your women's flyweight division, but I mean, again, Ortega just, despite the fact that she's the favorite, I would assume, she just isn't close to being relevant at flyweight. Whereas with Tokhov and France, you got guys that have had experience, guys that really aren't too far away from a middleweight championship, because if you are breathing, you aren't too far away from a middleweight championship opportunity in the Bellator division. Maybe the thought process is this fight could be a little boring, and there's a likelihood of a more excitement in the women's flyweight bout. But plain and simple, Tokhov, France, should be on the main card here.
Yeah, I mean, outside of that, I think the only other fight that probably people may recognize is James Terry against J.C. Lamas. Outside of that, I mean, it is all local ticket sellers. You've got three fighters on that card that are making their pro debut. A majority of them have less than six fights or less in their professional career. So, but yeah, I mean, you mentioned if you're going to tune into preliminary card, it's for that middleweight matchup. I thought it should have been on the main card. Co-main event of this fight card: Josh Thompson against Patricky Pitbull. And it was interesting, as I mentioned a little while ago, hearing Josh Thompson talk. And, saying, hey, the only reason I took this fight is in San Jose. I know Patricky Pitbull has wanted this fight. And when it comes to Bellator, Josh Thompson, this is a huge step up in competition from him, of the guys that he has fought in Bellator to this time. And it has been some time since we've seen Josh Thompson. The last time we saw him was December of 2015. That was a win over Pablo Villaseca. Prior to that, he got a win over Mike Bronzulis. And as I kind of think about this fight, why do I smell a split decision coming either way?
Man, because I think if you see a stand-up fight, you're going to see really close rounds between these two. Unless either one of them is able to differentiate a round by dropping the other one, I think you're going to see the type of stand-up competitiveness, or the type of fight where one of the guys between Patricky and Thompson, Jason, is getting the better of the stand-up, and you get a late takedown scored. I think this is a fight where if it was made in 2015, I would have felt more confident in picking Josh Thompson here. But when you think about the layoff, when you think about the age, every time Josh Thompson does a press conference or does a quote, gets interviewed, he always says something that makes me not want to pick him fight, because he's always hinting at retirement. So the gap has closed. Patricky's my pick. But it's not one that you feel confident about, because, like you, I do think this one plays out close. And you know what? If it is a split decision, you are talking about Josh Thompson fighting in his backyard.
Yeah, that's got to be part of it if you're Patricky Pitbull. And my pick is Patricky Pitbull by split decision. I think, like, kind of what you said there, I think a lot of this fight's going to play out on the feet. And don't rule out Patricky pulling out that late takedown to seal around there. But you talk about the question with Josh Thompson. I think there's also questions with Patricky Pitbull heading into this fight. This is his first fight, since that Chandler knockout, which brutal knockout. And when I talked to him about a week and a half ago, I asked him, I said, hey, it's been 8 months since the last time. Was it because you wanted to take some time off after that loss? He's like, no. He's like, if I would have had an opportunity to come back sooner, I would have. But he said that one of the key things for him in this training camp was actually the fact that his brother Patricio was in his fight camp the entire time, because Patricio right now does not have a fight. Actually mentioned to me that Patricio was supposed to fight last month, but that fight ultimately did not take place. But I'm going to go Patricky Pitbull by a split decision here. But if you're Bellator, they have to want Josh Thompson to win.
Yeah, they want that Thompson-Chandler fight, do they? I mean, this is, to me, such a marketable fight. A fight I probably would have gone to anyway.
Or how about Thompson-Benson Henderson?
Yeah. Either of those you can sell.
I mean, I know Benson Henderson's recovering from that from the knee injury he had, but I think, you know, but yeah, I mean, at 155 at Bellator, there just is not a lot of options for Michael Chandler.
Yeah, it's a division that for a while has had that kind of has had a decent elite tier, but the last few years Chandler's been picking apart these guys, or if he has not, the likely challengers have faltered in some way or another, and they need, I mean, what they need is not only Thompson to win here, but to win decisively, to look renewed, reinvigorated, to cap off one more run. Because, I mean, if you do have a really close lackluster-type performance, that's when you have a bit more issue selling a Chandler-type fight or a Benson Henderson-type fight. I think you want to get a little sizzle on that steak here with the type of performance, but I don't think that's actually going to happen. But again, for Patricky, if he does beat Josh Thompson, I mean, when you look at Thompson's skill level and history, that would at that point in time be Patricky's best win he's ever had. So while Patricky's my pick, it's important to note that he's never really beat somebody at the level of Josh Thompson.
You know, as a fight fan, I would love to see Michael Chandler or Justin Gaethje. I just think realistically it never happens.
I mean, you are talking about two of the best fighters outside of the UFC. You are talking about, between Gaethje and Michael Chandler, phenomenal action on the feet. That is literally a dream fight. I mean, the type of fight that I think the UFC would feel more than comfortable putting on a TV main card, because that would just be spectacular. I mean, that's a fight I think anybody who's watched either of those guys fight for more than 30 seconds would just love. I mean, that is the dream non-UFC lightweight fight.
Yeah, I mean, we got a question from Chris Conte asking where we thought Marlon Moraes and Justin Gaethje would end up, and Chris Rose says everyone assumes UFC because of Ali Abdelaziz, but it's all about money, so it could end up in Bellator. I think you're going to see both those guys in the UFC. I don't think Bellator, they may make a, I don't think they would make a big money offer to Marlon Moraes. Just, I mean, look, they didn't want to make a big money offer to Aljamain Sterling, so I don't think they would make a money offer to Marlon Moraes. I could see them making a big money offer Justin Gaethje just because of the fighting style that Justin has. But I think at the end of the day, within the next 6 months, I think both Marlon Moraes and Justin Gaethje are UFC fighters.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of these World Series of Fighting guys make the leap to the UFC, largely due to the fact that whenever we make decisions on what we want, we always kind of look back at what we did not have previously. And what these guys did have previously was nice paychecks, but what they didn't have was high-level competition and the opportunity to be recognized as a top fighter in their division. So I think they're going to want to go to the UFC and kind of strive and achieve for that. I think it's going to be hard for Bellator to pick off some of these top World Series of Fighting guys.
On the other three fights on the Bellator card, just kind of quickly go through our predictions here. I'm going to go Chuck Congo by second round TKO, Vitor Ortega by decision, and Josh Koscheck by second round TKO.
Yeah, I like Josh Koscheck by a unanimous decision. I guess I'll go Ortega decision. God, I don't want another decision. So I'll just say that Congo is able to somehow finish Ole Thompson by strikes in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, Chuck Congo, man, it's just his past couple fights. I remember his fight against Tony Johnson. I remember because I got off a flight and I was watching on my phone, and I turned it off at their second round. Like,
no,
just...
it would put you to sleep. It would put you to. I mean, that fight was a dumpster fire.
And it was not entertaining.
Yeah, it was quite the Congo fight, quite the Tony Johnson fight, but it was to be expected between those two. At least with Ole, sometimes he mixes it up and takes some risk. But Congo, despite the age, man, he has been really consistent against average heavyweight. So I think he gets the win.
In terms of prop bets, in terms of the Bellator card, there's the only prop bets that are out there are over-under numbers. And there was two of them I looked at. I'm not, you know, one of them I would not say I'm super high on, but Thompson, Pitbull under 2.5 plus 180. I could see either one of those guys maybe, you know, getting a knockout. The other one, Koscheck and Alonzo under 2.5 plus 175. And that's probably more thinking that Josh gets a stoppage victory there.
Yeah, I would, despite the fact that I thought Koscheck would win by decision, that to me looks like the best bet there at under 2.5 rounds for Koscheck Alonzo. I think when you have so many unknowns, you're basically saying under 2.5, the fight ends and finish at any point in time, essentially. And with so many unknowns, I think you got to take that at plus 175.
Yeah. Now, let's turn our attention over to the UFC. Of course, this is going to be on Sunday night. Do you like the Sunday night UFC cards? Personally, I do.
I do, when there's nothing else to watch.
Yeah, they do go up against the NBA All-Star game or the NBA no defense game.
Again, I do when there's nothing else to watch. There is nothing else to watch.
By the way, how is Russell Westbrook not a starter?
I'll tell you exactly why, Jason.
He only averages like a triple-double a game.
I know he averages a triple-double a game, but I don't know if you like analytics, Jason. But
I do.
He's not an efficient shooter. All right, Steph Curry and James Harden, they make the most out of their opportunities. Whereas Mr. Ball Hog Westbrook, and yes, this is my audition for.
Whoa! Your boy James Harden doesn't exactly, he likes to throw it in the hoop as well.
He does, but I assure you, his true shooting percentage is far, far superior to Russell Westbrook's. That is the bottom line.
But you were building a team, would you build your team around Russell Westbrook or James Harden?
Oh, James Harden. I mean, look.
Oh, man, I would take Westbrook.
Who's the 3 seed in the West and who's barely hanging on? That's my question.
Hey, it's also who you got around you to.
Okay.
You can't play 1-on-5.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that Ryan Anderson was a superstar player.
Hey, just let him spot up in the corner and just throw it to him when the double team comes.
Look, man, Fedor and Matt Mitrione both have exhibited more athleticism in their past two fights, and Ryan Anderson has his entire career.
Hey, but the guy can nail a three-pointer.
That he can. That he can. I mean, that's the one advantage the Rockets have is every time Harden passes the ball, it is likely going to end in a three-point shot.
So are you saying that – are you doing the split screen on Sunday night?
No, I'm watching UFC entirely, Jason. I mean, to me, what NBA All-Star – what ruined the All-Star game was Twitter. Because I don't really want to sit through – the entire All-Star game. I want to see the highlights, the crazy dunks, the hijinks. And you know what's got me covered? Twitter.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you the last time I really watched the NBA All-Star game.
You must have been a child, right? Back when we were a child, back with the Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell.
I mean, you maybe turn it on for 5 or 10 minutes, but after that, it's just like, okay, this is, what's the point of watching?
Well, I got to wonder, what time is this UFC card supposed to be over? Because, I mean, I got
midnight. Midnight Eastern time. Oh. So the NBA game tip-off's a little after 8 o'clock Eastern time. I mean, they'll go up against each other. But it's, for me, I like these Sunday cards. Now, I do understand maybe some people have to be at work first thing Monday morning. Maybe you don't necessarily care for these Sunday fight cards, but I like them. I really wish it was a 4-fight main card instead of a 6-fight main card, that it was over at 11 o'clock Eastern time as opposed to 9 p.m. Eastern time. But I'll tell you the fight that I think is under the radar that not many people are talking about, and I think this is a fight that's going to be an excellent fight, and that's Jack Marshman and Thiago Santos, which is going to open up the preliminary card on FS1. That is the one of the fights that I'm most interested in on Sunday.
You know what? That's a good pick, Jason. Not something I would have thought of originally, but when I envision what's going to take place, I think the general thought process is Jack Marshman and Thiago Santos are going to hit each other in the face quite a bit, right? Like, that's generally your thought, is that you're going to anticipate a striking clash between these two?
Oh, no doubt. No, yeah. I think this is going to be 15 minutes of just essentially a kickboxing match in an MMA cage.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, that could be a really nice way to begin and end that Fox Sports 1 prelim cards. Again, the one fight I hadn't mentioned at this point in time is also kind of interesting. You have, Ayman Zahabi, he has a brother who has a prominent gym. And I'm excited to see him fight as well, Jason. I think anytime you come with that type of background, that type of pedigree, and an undefeated resume. He's fighting a tough fighter in Reginaldo Vieira with real success. I think this is just a really awesome 4-5 prelim card.
I think even if you add the preliminary card that's on Fight Pass, I love that matchup between Gerald Merchart and Ryan James. That's a nice middleweight matchup.
Yeah, and that's the type of fight where I could see that one ending early, because the defense of both guys, particularly Ryan James, leaves a bit more to be desired. So altogether, I think it's pretty solid. I think Fight Pass is going to have a hard time getting a whole lot of people to tune into just one fight like that, and then make that transition to Fox Sports 1. But I think this is going to be a good card. I guess the question is, for those Sunday night cards, is how many decisions are you going to get? Because that can be the one deterrent to watching these things, is if you have decision after decision after decision.
Okay, so when we do these preview podcasts, I always have the fight card in front of me in one column, and the other column is my predictions.
Yeah.
As I look at the UFC card, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 fights going to the decision.
Okay, we got 1, 2. How many fights are there? There's what, 10 fights?
11.
11 fights? Let me guess the 4 fights you don't have going to a decision, all right?
All right. Well, I think one's got to be pretty obvious.
Lewis Brown.
Correct.
Oh, man.
I think another one's pretty obvious.
Another one's pretty obvious.
It's on the main card. So now you've got 5 fights to look from. I think one is very obvious.
Cecilia Tucker.
No, I have that going to decision.
Oh, man. Hendricks Lombard?
Decision.
Now I just got 3 fights. McMahon and Mizani?
Yeah. I think Sherry McMahon's going to win that by first round TKO. I think that she'll take Gina down and she'll get a stoppage via strikes on the ground.
Look, no question, Sarah McMahon has established the type of respect where you got to say, yeah, the 36-year-old fighter is significantly more talented than Gina Mizani. It's just that when I think of Sarah McMahon, I don't necessarily think finisher, but I tell you what, on second glance, she has finished 2 fights in her UFC career.
And you know what I liked? What I heard Sarah McMahon say this week in her interview with Mike Bond of MMA Junkie is the fact that she knows that she's got to go out and have dominating victories to put herself in a position to be right there in line for a title shot at 135 pounds. I mean, everyone knows it's going to be Nunez Shevchenko, but she's trying to put herself right there, as the next title challenger in line. So I really like that. Of course, she was initially supposed to take on Liz Carmouche. Liz, had to pull out of this fight. Now Gina, steps up, who was on the Ultimate Fighter 18, lost in the preliminary round of that reality show. But I think Sarah McMahon, I like her by TKO. The rest, there's, McMahon and I've got Derek Lewis winning by second round TKO against Travis Brown. The other 4 fights on the main card, I think they all go to decision. If I was going to say one does not go to the decision, I would maybe pick Paul Felder.
Yeah, I could see, because I think Paul Felder and Alessandro Ricci is going to play out on the feet mostly. And you could just see one of these two guys get caught. I mean, that would be a good way to start off the card. I mean, best case scenario for the UFC is you have Felder or Ricci be a stand-up bout. McMahon get the finish early, and then either Cesar Mutante or Elias Theodoro look real impressive there. Although that's the type of fight where I could see that one going distance. I think both guys are, well, especially, so basically what I'm saying is I think Elias Theodoro is hard to finish, and I think Ferreira has the type of wrestling game to really equalize Theodoro.
Yeah, I like Theodoro in that matchup. I think he gets a decision win there. Obviously a guy that in terms of the Canadian UFC market really is a guy that they're getting behind there. So I like him by decision. I like Gavin Tucker to win by decision. I think that's more about going against Sam Cecilia than anything else, or where Sam's at this point. The co-main event, I'm going Hector Lombard by decision, but man, I'm not confident at all in that pick.
Yeah, man.
But I did see, so we're recording this on Friday morning, so we are 24 hours away from the weigh-in starting. I saw on Thursday afternoon that Johnny Hendricks was 11 pounds off of making weight. Does Johnny Hendricks make weight on Saturday?
No, I don't think so. Why? I mean, look, man, he can say, look, okay, here's the thing, Jason. It feels like we just previewed a Johnny Hendricks fight last week. And
that would have been December.
I know December. Not that long ago. Oh, wait. No, that's not true. Did we not preview a Johnny Hendricks fight and that fight got canceled?
Well, you had the Neil Magny fight.
I could have sworn Johnny Hendricks had a fight and he missed weight. Maybe that was a Neil Magny fight.
Yeah, he missed weight, but he gave up 20% of his person and they still fought.
Well, with all that being said, that's December. And I see all these quotes about how he's like a new man or whatever. Like, you can't change yourself in a month, you know? I mean, maybe I'm just bitter because I didn't live up to my New Year's resolution to eat better and get a six pack, but I don't know. I'm not sold. But the thing is, Jason, if you're not sold on Johnny Hendricks, you got to sell yourself on Hector Lombard, and that is almost as difficult.
Yeah, so I saw Hector this week say that, you know, basically, you know, regretted doing the whole 170-pound move. It also said that he returned too quickly, you know, between the Magny and Dan Henderson fights. And as I say, not confident, but I probably have more faith in Hector Lombard right now than I do Johnny Hendricks. And I think that's very telling about where we think of Johnny Hendricks at this point.
Yeah, I like Lombard as well. It's largely due to the fact that I'm not sold on Johnny Hendricks competing against top 15 fighters anymore in 185 or 170. I love Johnny Hendricks in terms of his personality, but I have real questions about the mental fortitude. And I think he could play it really boring, utilize his wrestling game, and just equalize Lombard, make it boring, get the win. But Lombard does have good takedown defense. I think he wins there. And just to tag back on that Gavin Tucker-Sam Cecilia fight, I think that fight, when you're predicting it, it's in the eye of the beholder. It tells you more about the person predicting the fight than the actual fighters, because there is not a whole lot to go on when it comes to Gavin Tucker tape. So basically, you have to ask yourself, am I going to pick the newcomer against the somewhat disappointing Sam Cecilia, or am I going to pick the veteran against the newcomer with no experience against top-level fighters? That's the question you have to ask yourself. And my answer will be Cecilia, but I wouldn't be surprised if Gavin Tucker just comes out, lights the world on fire, and we're leading the show with him. Although, I would be surprised if we're leading the show with Gavin Tucker.
By the way, did you hear the disappointing news?
What?
Edmund Tervurdian will not be in the corner of Travis Brown.
What the heck?
So does the crowd in Halifax on Sunday night start chanting, Klitsch, Klitsch, head movement, head movement?
That would be the ultimate troll job if a crowd started chanting head movement. How could Edmund Tervurdian?
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be the greatest thing ever. But why isn't he in the corner?
Travis has really said he's going to have Ray Sefo and Ricky Lundell. You know, it came out a couple weeks ago that Travis was doing his camp in Las Vegas. You know, at that time, he said that Edmund was coming out, you know, once a week to Vegas. He said this week that this was kind of similar to what he'd done in previous camps where, you know, he's been with Ricky Lundell for some time now, where Ricky would come out to Vegas, you know, for a week and or a day or something and do his grappling aspect. And, you know, he said really the big part of the reason of moving his camp to Vegas for this one was just about having big bodies around and there at Extreme Couture in various Vegas gyms. There is a lot of heavyweight fighters out there, so you do make sense of why for Travis Brown. And I just, as I think about how this fight ultimately plays out, you know, and I know we think of Derek Lewis as a striker, and yeah, obviously we know Travis Brown for his striking, but I just feel like Derek is going to get the takedown, and he's going to pound Travis Brown out on the ground.
I could certainly see that, Jason. I think when you look at Brown, you look at Lewis, and you ask yourself, what has gone wrong with Travis Brown? Well, it's because he fought Fabricio Werdum. I mean, that's an issue. But it's largely lack of focus, right? Like, it's just he goes and he fights and it makes no sense a lot of the time of what he's doing. You can trace that back to his fight camp for sure. So maybe we're seeing a transition point with, you look at him training in Vegas, to refining himself. But I think the issue for Travis Brown is a man like Derek Lewis is not a man you want to be when you're trying to find yourself. He's he's not the guy you want on the other side of the cage because, one, he punches really hard. Two, when he's on top of you, he will punch you really hard. And three, at the end of the day, you're going to get punched really hard. And I think that's likely what's going to happen. I think for Lewis, the clearest path to victory is what you're laying out there. I could see him get in some issues with Brown on the feet because Brown at times in his career has showcased real nice ability, real nice movement, really good athleticism. Still, Lewis appears to be the safer pick. He's got a whole lot of momentum. He's phenomenal on social media, and I do think you see him get the finish there. And the scenario of him winning the fight via ground and pound is certainly a realistic one.
And I've got Lewis getting the finish in the second round. Do you see him getting a finish as well?
Yeah, I would say first round. I'm not much of a second round finish type guy. I know you like to pick your split decisions, your second rounds, et cetera. I keep it simple, Jason. First round, TKO.
And, so we'll see what happens there. In terms of some of the preliminary cards we haven't mentioned, you briefly mentioned about Santiago Ponzinibbio. I will go Santiago by second round TKO. Esparza Marcos, is anyone predicting this fight not to go the distance?
I don't know, dude. I think you're just being real sexist. I think it's going to end in before the fight starts. So I think you're being sexist. No, yeah, this one's going to go the distance, right? Like, unless, actually, you could see a submission, like one of them get caught in a submission. But when I think of Randa Marcos, what I think of is a tough son of a gun or a tough daughter of a gun. Like, she is hard to finish. She is always in contention. She is well-rounded. With Carla Esparza, it's all about dominance in terms of positioning on the feet and especially on the ground. So I think Esparza wins a decision. Norton Talib, let's give him a little credit there. I love the way he looked in his last fight against Eric Silva. But Eric Silva is very much a blank canvas for fighters with punching power. And Santiago Ponzinibbio is the type of fighter where he gets an impressive win here and we can start building a real nice case of momentum, a guy who could really skyrocket up the welterweight rankings in 2017. He's my pick.
And I'll just go down all my picks for the UFC event. I've got Derek Lewis by second-round TKO, Hector Lombard by decision, Gavin Tucker by decision, Elias Theodoro by decision, Sarah McMahon by first-round TKO, Paul Felder by decision, Santiago Ponzinibbio by second-round TKO, Carlos Esparza by decision, Zahabi by decision, Marshman by decision, and Gerald Mercer by third-round submission.
Third-round submission. Oh, my goodness gracious. I will go Gerald Mercer, first-round submission. Jake Marshman, unanimous decision. Zahabi, first-round TKO. Carlos Esparza, first-round submission, Jason. Santiago Ponzinibbio, unanimous decision. Paul Felder, we'll go decision. Sarah McMahon, first round TKO like you. You know what? I was thinking Cesar Ferreira, but the more and more I think about it, the more and more I like Elias Theodoro. He is very good looking, much like Justin Trudeau. So I like Kim UD. Cecilia, first round KO/TKO. Johnny Hendricks, I'd like him to lose to Lombard via decision. And lastly, Derek Lewis, first round KO/TKO.
And we'll go back to Bellator briefly, just as we kind of like to run down our predictions here. I'm going to go Matt Mitrione by second round TKO, Patricky Pitbull by split decision, Chuck Congo by second round TKO, Vito Ortega by decision, and Josh Koscheck by second round TKO.
Yeah, I think I've already said a lot of these, so I'm scared I'm going to accidentally say a different one than I said originally on the podcast. So hopefully I don't. Matt Mitrione, first round KO/TKO. Ooh, Patricky Pitbull, unanimous decision. Chet Congo, first round KO/TKO. Beto Ortega, unanimous decision. Josh Koscheck, unanimous decision.
Well, you're the hipster there going Chet Congo by first round stoppage?
You look, man. Chet Congo, at age 40 to 410, I believe is going to change, and he's going to skyrocket. And Congo Mitrione, book it. I feel like that's going to headline Madison Square Garden, and I think I'm excited.
Or Congo Fedor?
Congo Fedor. Oh, I mean, yeah, that could happen, win or lose for Fedor.
Yeah, but all these. This is, of course, the Bellator card is on Saturday night. UFC card on Sunday. We'll be back on Monday as we're going to recap everything that happened at UFC Fight Night 105 and Bellator 172. Any predictions on how we lead off that post-fight show, Daniel?
Gavin Tucker.
Okay, hipster.
We're going to talk Gavin Tucker. No, I mean, I think we're going to lead it with Fedor Mitrione. I think that's, despite the fact that I said Lewis Brown is the fight I'm more looking forward to, I think Fedor is the story here.
Yeah, I think ultimately, yeah, we will be leading off with Fedor. I think that's pretty, you know, because I think we either going to be saying, oh my God, can you believe the knockout that Fedor got? Or we're going to go, oh my God, how bad did Fedor look?
Oh my God, Fedor wore a sweater. I'm so glad they spent a lot of marketing power behind that.
It's interesting to me how the MMA community reacts to that. And I'm sitting there going, the MMA community is who's going to be watching on Saturday night regardless. Is promoting a guy wearing a sweater going to get you the casual fan?
No. No, it's not. But, I mean, you don't have to be a hater about it. I mean...
No, you know. I think that when you're trying to get, you know... the casual sports fan tune in, is that the way to go about it? I mean, apparently Fedor's going to auction it off at some point. How much do you think an MMA fan would pay for that sweater?
How much did a MMA fan pay for World Series of Fighting?
What was it, like 11 people, 25 million?
So I'll say 26 mil. No, I think we'll get into the thousands for that sweater, dude. I mean, there's some crazy. I think we may get in the tens of thousands, honestly. I mean, there's going to be like two or three people, and then the guy that books like heavyweights that are past their prime to fight in Russia, that guy's probably going to be in on it too. I mean, the sweater has some mystique. It's touched Fedor's nipples.
So what if he wears an undershirt?
Oh, I didn't think about that. I mean, look, Fedor's the type of guy where I think he's got real strong nipples, so I feel like even if he wears an undershirt, it's going to protrude and touch the sweater.
Oh, man. We'll wrap it up on that talk.
Yeah, man. Look, man, I bring it real, all right? Look, you're not going to hear that out of Sean Grande, all right? He's going to be towing the company line, but I got my takes. I got the scoops and stuff.
You know, they're gonna announce the main event for Bellator 178 on Friday.
What is it? I know you know it, so why don't you tell us 50 some minutes into the podcast?
I've asked around. I haven't got a clear answer. I truly think that the UFC has already told Bellator we're not matching the deal for Ryan Bader. I think they're announcing Phil Davis, Ryan Bader for Bellator 178 on April 21st at the Mohegan Sun.
That's a good take. I agree with you. That is crazy, by the way, that we're at Bellator 173 and
172.
And we got all these events scheduled. I mean, the fact that we're talking about, what did you say, April what? We're doing Bellator?
April 21st.
April 21st, we're doing, so from this point forward, April 21st, we're going to have, what, six Bellator events?
Yeah, you got to remember, next week you got the card in Ireland, headlined by Liam McGarry and Chris Fields. Then the week after that, we have the card in Thackerville, headlined by Marlos Kunin and Julia Budd for the inaugural featherweight title, women's featherweight title. Then we have King Mo and Rampage at the end of March. And then that's 175, 176. I can't think off the top of my head what it is. 177.
The main event for that one.
What's that?
It's in Italy, so there is a main event.
Oh, yeah. That would be Alessio's card, headlining that card. And then 177's in Budapest, which is Darren Caldwell and Eduardo Dantas. That is, the 14th, I believe? April 14th?
Yep. Yeah.
And then 178 will be the 21st in up in Connecticut.
And then you got Paul Daly and Rory McDonald in England. That's dope.
I was actually talking about that on my podcast this week. If you are an MMA fan in London, and you can only go to one event, you got to be buying tickets for Bellator over that UFC card in March.
What's the main event for the UFC card?
Jimmy Manuel and Corey Anderson.
Yeah. I guess I gotta look at the rest of the card, but I mean
Daly McDonald's one of the best fights that can be booked in all of 170 pounds.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. It's going to that would have there had to be a lot of depth that UFC card for me to.
I mean, the co-main event of the UFC card is a really good co-main event: Gunnar Nelson and Alan Joe Blaine. But I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that I mean, obviously for the sports fan in the UK that has a lot of expendable income, they probably go to both. But if you're an MMA fan and you can only afford to go to one of the shows, I think you got to go. They would pick the Bellator show.
Yeah, I'm looking at this card now. I would say with the fact that Bellator's only announced one fight, I would actually rather go watch the Bellator card just for that one fight. There isn't a whole lot in the UFC card upon first examination that sticks out to me.
Yeah, that card in London isn't exactly a sexy fight card.
Nope, I don't.
You hope it delivers. I mean, hell, but what is it? You know, 2 weeks before that's UFC 209. Sign me up for that card. I'm excited for that one.
UFC 209. Oh yeah, Woodley Thompson too. Yeah, sign me up for that.
Khabib and Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, and Rashad Evans and Dan Kelly. Let's get it on. I can't.
Oh, That is a showcase fight for Rashad Evans.
Yeah, that it is. Mark Hunt, I would be shocked if he fights on that card. I don't understand this situation.
I mean, yeah, with that whole situation, I mean, you just if we get the fight week and that fight still is taking place, is UFC embedded falling around Mark Hunt?
No. No, it's going to be it's going to be a lot of Dan Kelly footage instead. I mean, no, I would assume they have an awful relationship, and this is like some type of contractual obligation. I feel dirty with what's happening here. I mean, these two people need to be separated. Mark Hunt's got a good case, but yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
Well, right? I take you saw Brock Lesnar told the UFC he's retired, right?
Yeah, just until
I call that. Yeah, he doesn't want to be in the USADA testing pool. I'll just say that. That's what that's about.
Yeah, it's called I'd rather fight Bill Goldberg than Mark Hunt.
Final thing, we'll wrap it up on this. You know, Ariel Helwani reported the other day, GSP and the UFC close to terms. Mm-hmm. Who do you want to see him fight? I'm going to say this, Nate Diaz.
Oh, that would be dope. Oh, that would be a great one. I think that's a great pick, Jason. I'm going to say he takes on... I've seen a couple headlines. I don't know where it originated from, but GSP taking on Michael Bisping. I've seen that around, and I've seen that. I think when you see stuff like that, there's some smoke. Whenever you see like a fight that you don't originally think of, and that's just out there, I think that means there's.
I think there's a lot of fans throwing that out there that I think they ultimately believe that Bisping will not fight Yoel Romero. I think that's some of the thought process. I mean, if you're in the Michael Bisping camp, if they offer you Yoel Romero or George St. Pierre, you take George St. Pierre because that's a bigger money fight.
Yeah, and George St. Pierre isn't Yoel Romero.
I mean, in no disrespect, Yoel Romero, but you know, he's not going to bring in the pay-per-view buys that George St. Pierre is going to bring in.
And he's a scary man.
I think it's pretty safe to say that Yoel Romero is the uncrowned UFC middleweight champion.
Yeah, I think he's the best middleweight in the world right now.
You know, I mean, but I think the question with GSP, I think, is more about, well, where is he going to fight? You know, what weight class? Is he going to fight at 185? Is he going to fight 170?
175.
Do we maybe finally see Anderson Silva GSP?
Yeah. I feel like that's got to be a real.
I don't think the list is long of potential opponents. I think you have to look at both Diaz brothers, because I think either one of them makes sense. I think that you have to look at Michael Bisping and Anderson Silva outside. I think those got to be the top four names.
Yeah, I think what you're looking at is you need a pay-per-view main event. That's simple. A marquee pay-per-view main event. The list isn't long for potential opponents that would create that, and I think you laid out the list.
And I really don't want to see GSP against either Woodley or Thompson, because I think that ends really bad for GSP.
Yeah, out of all the scenarios, I think that's the most... I think Nate Diaz would beat him pretty convincingly, but again...
I think George takes him down.
I guess. Yeah, that's a scenario that could play out, certainly. It's just... I don't know. It's hard to take such a long layoff from the sport, return, and even return to like 80% of what you once were.
It's been a long time since we've seen GSP.
Yep. I mean, yeah, we've been reminded about it. I mean, the way Anderson has looked, the way Fedor has looked, time and again, fighters that take long layoffs in return.
You know what they say about Father Time?
He's undefeated, Jason. Undefeated. You know, and that's probably why Serge Ibaka, age 39, did not work out for the Magic.
The Father Time comment has become a running joke with me and my buddies that I watch fights with.
Every time you watch Bellator?
Oh, UFC too. Oh man, it has to come up at least once a time when we're watching UFC.
Yeah,
me and my buddies, we never get together for the Bellator events, but we're getting together on Saturday night for the Bellator event.
This one calls for it. I mean, the Tito fight called for it as well. And when you scan the horizons on Bellator, I think the next time we're going to be gathering together,
Rampage Mo.
Mo, yeah, Rampage King Mo. I think that's the next one.
I mean, and hopefully they air daily McDonald Live. Hopefully that's not via tape delay.
Yeah.
If it comes out that they're tape delaying that show, whew.
Yeah, people aren't going to care if you tape delay Italy, because I would assume it's going to be, like you said, a Sakara main event. But if it's an appointment viewing fight, like Aurora and Daly, that's when you're doing your fans a disservice.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said last week, or earlier this week, I said if you want these tape delay shows to stop, you just have to stop watching them. And that'll get the attention of Viacom.
Yeah, because I think today they believe that the ratings, there isn't a big difference.
That's pretty much what you hear. You know, is a feeling is, hey, it doesn't really matter. You know, and it's interesting to see what's going to happen with Spike as a, I'm not sure when the name change exactly happens, when it goes to, what's it called, Paramount, is it Paramount Networks? That's what it's called?
Paramount Networks.
I always say it's never a good thing when you're changing names and you're rebranding yourself. Usually there's a reason you're rebranding.
Yeah, this one sounds like American Classic Movies by Paramount Network. The only good rebrand I can think of is Versus Network to NBC Sports.
Yeah, but it's like it's something you've mentioned here on this podcast in the past. You know, I think one of the things that hurt Spike a little bit recently is how they got moved on Dish Networks, where they weren't around the TBSs and the TNTs of the world.
Yeah. Honestly, when I hear about the name change, it makes me think that Spike TV is getting out of the live sports business.
Everything I've heard is no. That's not the case.
Paramount Networks just sounds so old. It just sounds so old. Like I'm gonna turn and watch like a Jane Eyre movie or something. Like I don't want to watch like Aubrey Hepburn. I feel like that's what I think when I think of Paramount.
This is just my guess. I had no inside information on this, but my guess is they're trying to get more of a female audience for that network as opposed to the male-dominated audience they have.
Okay, that makes sense.
When you think of Spike TV, I mean, obviously a sports fan, you think Bellator, you think PBC, but I think if you went on the street and you said, hey, what do you think of Spike TV? Tell me some shows that you know there. It's probably they just named Bar Rescue and what's it, Ink Master?
Yeah, those two, yeah. Yeah, there's a big drop off between Bar Rescue and everything else.
That's understanding, I mean, Bar Rescue is their top show when it comes to revenue.
Yeah, it's so easy to like just watch that at any point in time of the day.
Yeah. It's crazy. But these fights will go down this weekend. We'll be back on Monday to recap those on the MMA Report post-fight show. Of course, you can give myself a follow on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. You can follow Daniel on Twitter at DanielGabonDGG. Also, be sure to like the MMA Report on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMMAReport.
This is a Fabulous Sports Big Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
All right, we have to talk to Mike DeCourcy. He knows everything in the world about the NCAA. Florida State's doing really well, aren't they?
They are. They have a very gifted young team, very hard to play against. The one thing they haven't done enough yet, Babe, is prove they can play away from home. That's the next step for them. And they need to win a couple of road games, a couple more road games to really show that. And if they fail there, then I think they need to win in the ACC tournament. They can't just be a team that's good at home. They have to be a team that can beat people away from home. That's the thing that's the next step for them. Because sometimes when you're Florida State and you go in against a team that's been winning for 100 years and you've only been winning for 20, Sometimes that's hard to overcome. You'd be surprised. But that gets into – I still remember in Tulsa when Bill Self was the coach at Tulsa, now the coach at Kansas. When he was at Tulsa, he had a great team, and they got to the Elite Eight, and they were kicking North Carolina's tail, and North Carolina wasn't very good that year. They lost, I think, 10, 12 games, and they were an 8 seed, and they happened to find themselves in the Elite Eight, and Tulsa was giving it to them. And then with about 8 minutes left, it was like they went to the TV timeout, and they thought, oh, my God, we're 8 minutes from the Final Four, and that was it. They were done. They couldn't play anymore. So Florida State needs to get over that. Florida State needs to start to play like, hey, we're really good. This is who we are. We're talented. Yeah, we're a little young, but our guards are veteran. We should win these games. And they have not played on the road with that mentality.
The Fabulous Sports Big can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.